This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Club down by Myers and the Canucks transition the other way. Myers into the Edmonton zone center. He passed him. They score. Hugh Suter driving the middle. Deflects it past Stuart Skinner. And the Canucks go up 2-0 with 9 minutes left in the second. Battling with Hronek down low. JT Miller can't clear. Nurse gets a shot for the line. Tip. They score. Matthias Janmark was in the slot, as was Evander Kane. This was deflected home, and I'll be interested to see if this was a high stick.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Garland far boards. He'll pass it out to center for Lindholm. Left wing Joshua with a chance of the empty net. He scores! The Oilers had just pulled the goaltender as the Canucks gained possession. And Dakota Joshua ices this one for Vancouver into the yawning cage, scoring his 17th of the season to make it 3-1. Canucks.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks sweep the season series against the Edmonton Oilers, now 1 point away from clinching the Pacific Division with 2 games remaining on the campaign. What a season for your Vancouver Canucks 3-1 win over the Oilers. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by the number 5 Orange on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. Get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We are going to bring in Brett Festerling into the conversation in just a moment. But what a game from Casey DeSmith and the Vancouver Canucks. Well, this could have been viewed as the biggest game of the season. The Pacific Division pretty much being determined with a regulation win for either side, yep, potentially tonight. And it's the Canucks getting the job done, Dan.
Well, they didn't always make it look pretty, but they got the job done and stuck to their staples, as Rick Tocchet would say, got back to the defensive team that we've gotten used to seeing over the second half of the season, and really kept the Oilers to the outside for much of the third period. Didn't give them a ton of high danger chances. And, you know, that bears out in some of the numbers that we see at the advanced analytics spots. And I thought the Canucks played a pretty solid game after a bit of a slow start in the first. They were pretty bang on for the 2 points tonight. And, you know, it's a long season. Canucks were the best team from beginning to end, obviously, with the way the Oilers started this year, and a well-earned, should be very soon, a confirmed Pacific Division title.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if Edmonton drops a point, it's decided. If Vancouver picks up a point, it's decided. So
the magic number is one.
Yes. Now, to see, Edmonton still has 3 games to go.
Yes.
You know, they're playing San Jose, they're playing Arizona, and the final Coyotes game in Arizona before they're off to Salt Lake City, and then they close the season against the Colorado Avalanche. We're bludgeoned today by the Winnipeg Jets beating them 7-0. And that division has been decided. Dallas will win. It's going to be Winnipeg versus Colorado. We'll see who has home ice. But let's welcome in Brett Festerling into the conversation, calling the game tonight alongside Brendan Batchelor. And it's one of those games where in that first 10 minutes of the first period, Casey DeSmith really held down the fort. And if it wasn't for him in that first period, Brett, we're probably having a different conversation about this game tonight.
Yeah, first I want to say welcome back, Reach. I thought you were taking the whole Masters off. You want to come back tonight?
I should have taken the whole Masters off, man. I just I got a date planned with my couch for 11 a.m. tomorrow, and I can't wait for it.
Yeah, me too. I don't know if my three kids are going to cooperate with that, but that's my plan. But DeSmith was confident early, right? The first stop he has to make is a post-to-post one-timer by Drysdale, whether he gets all of it or not. That's a big stop. And that from there, he makes two other big stops with a tip and a side door kind of try. And then you can see he felt the puck early. He made some big stops, and that confidence seemed to carry through the game. So it was nice to see him back in the net and playing solid like we've seen him before.
You know, we've seen this team blow a couple leads here as the second half of the season has gone on, Brett. And I wouldn't say this third period was a Picasso by the Canucks. They probably just, you know,
there's a lot of punt and survive,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
There was a little bit of just throw the puck out of the zone when you have the opportunity. But when they were defending in zone, they did most in the third period, they did a pretty good job of keeping the Oilers to the perimeter and not allowing them any, you know, chances in that home plate, the slot area right in front of the blue paint. They kept them away from any real super high danger chances late in the third period.
Yeah, exactly. And there was attempts to get into that. You know, I think some teams don't necessarily attempt to get into those areas, and then it's easier to keep them outside. But there was attempts to, and you saw some big plays by guys like Lindholm, and I think Zadorov had a really strong game. And even Podkolzin and Lafferty had some wall battles in the third there. So you're right. It wasn't a Picasso by any means, but when they needed to bear down and protect those areas, they did. And they were really smart about, I think, when Edmonton didn't forecheck off the bat or go full out, then they were content to take it back and waste some more time or get it deep and then get fresh bodies on. So they've been pretty good in the third, and I think they did a good job tonight.
Yeah, I thought so too. And you know, in their defense, one thing Edmonton and Dan nailed this on the pregame show, saying Oilers do not have a ton of speed when Connor McDavid isn't in the lineup. And you could see, you know, their lack of pace was a bit of an issue here tonight against the Canucks. And when you're playing a team like that and they get deep and you get the puck out and they're not fast on the resets, getting the puck out is a lot more efficient against a team that's not as fast as the Oilers, right?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, you absolutely nailed it. I was actually shocked at how different the pace was without Connor on the ice, right? He just completely changes the dynamic of the game. But yeah, when you don't have teams that will hit you with that speed and just put you on your heels, or even they didn't even really seem to turn it up very fast, that allowed Canucks to get into their position and stuff. It just seemed like not an easy game for the Canucks, but they did a good job of taking what was given, and Edmonton didn't really try to force the issue. I was surprised with the lack of pace from Edmonton tonight.
You know, we talk so much about Elias Lindholm, the big trade deadline acquisition for the Canucks, and tonight he plays with Joshua and Garland. They iced the game with the empty netter, making it 3-1, and they played over 7 minutes against Leon Draisaitl, right, the biggest threat with Connor McDavid out of the lineup, and you know, maybe they got hemmed in their own end every now and again, but reality is they kept Leon Draisaitl off the score sheet. And in this role, like this is, I think, what Rick Tocchet wants out of Lindholm. If he's going to be the matchup guy, keep their top guy off the score sheet, and then your job's done for the night.
Yeah, I think it's one of the strongest games he's had. We gave him the player of the game because he made a lot of really good defensive plays, specifically on Draisaitl. Draisaitl tried to pick up some pace in the second. Even the third, where he would cut in, make nice moves into the feet of Lindholm, and he was able to get the puck and then make a play out. So I think he did a really good job of that. If you put, he was 60%. I don't know, he might have won a couple more at the end, but he was 60% near the end of the game there. If you're going to be 60% on draws versus their top line and you get the opportunity to get that possession and take it, I think that's a huge, huge move for Vancouver. And then mixing the fact that I think that line seemed to find more of their footing and chemistry into the second and then into the third, where they got some more offensive opportunities, and Garland had a lot of opportunities, and he seems like automatic to be there. He's not a passenger any night, but you know, to get all three of those guys going and Lindholm playing smart defensive hockey and having some offensive upside, I think with Garland and second chances there, I thought it was a really positive line tonight.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too. And one thing that we talked about a little bit on the pregame show was defensively, they need to be stout tonight in their own zone. And we talked about how Cole, who you pointed out, has been better in recent games. Susie hasn't been quite his sharpest. But I thought the Canucks defenders, Cole, Susie, Myers, and Zadorov had an overall pretty strong game. It was Hronek and Hughes who had the tougher shifts, I thought, defensively in their own zone at times. But those four, not named Hughes and Hronek tonight, came up big, especially with their size and physicality along the boards and the net front, clearing a lot of rebounds as well.
Yeah, I think they were very physical and cleared and kept guys to the outside. Myers had hit Zadorov, obviously was going back and forth with Kane every time they were on the ice, even in between periods when, you know, we're watching the TV timeouts and they're going back and forth at each other over the bench there. So I think they elevated that part of their game, and that's what you need in playoffs is big guys playing physical. And I thought that back end was, yeah, solid tonight, and it built out from there.
Well, we know the Oilers like to play a bit of a physical game, and it seemed like the Susie, Zadorov, and even Myers physicality, I wouldn't say it got under the skin completely of the Oilers, but they certainly were frustrated by how physical some of the Canucks defensemen were.
Yeah, I honestly couldn't make call. I don't know if you guys saw Sam Carrick in the first, I believe, Zadorov did the backhand, and then he just completely blew him up just because he was there.
Yeah.
That was incredible. I absolutely love that. But that's extremely frustrating. And then you mix in the, like, just getting hit where you have big guys that usually carry the physicality to other teams, and they're the guys getting run over and not expecting it. I think it's huge. And if you see that lineup or you play against them in the second round, it's going to be a focal point. It's something they're going to remember is, one, getting beat by them, but two, how physical those D-men are for those forward lines.
Yeah, absolutely. A strong game overall from those players, too. And, you know, I thought we should spend a moment here on the Pettersson line. You know, people were still texting in talking about Pettersson tonight. They're like, well, he needs to score a goal. He needs to be better. But I thought territorially, you know, Lindholm, they got the tough assignment, you know, and I thought the coaching staff did a good job of getting them out there situationally despite not having last change and really hounding Draisaitl all night. But I thought the Canucks' most efficient line, getting the puck out of their own zone, spending time in the offensive zone, creating scoring chances. Mikheyev missed like a bushel full of chances tonight. Yeah. But I thought that Pettersson line was consistently the most dangerous line the Canucks had tonight.
Yeah, they got through the neutral zone really well, all three of them. And then you're right, Mikheyev had a couple opportunities where he either kind of missed a one-timer or Skinner came up big. But Höglander, you know, reminded me a lot of, I mean, Höglander does this, but Garland in terms of not only getting in on the forecheck, turning a puck over, but then chasing it down and getting back. And then those guys actually made a lot of nice little plays, 4-foot, 3-foot plays, and even chips that created a lot of offensive opportunities. So I 100% agree with you. I don't have a lot of bad things to say about their game night, you know, from first line to fourth line. But again, with the depth kind of lineup that they put in, I think Mikheyev played super well on the wing with those two. And then obviously Miller and Besser and Suter, I think they had a good game as well. So it was nice to see some positive for all four lines.
If there's one thing I want to be picky about, fellas, it's I still want to see Pettersson shoot the puck a little bit more. He passed a couple of opportunities to shoot, and you know, especially with Mikheyev not finishing as well as you would like a top six winger to finish, you know, I'd just prefer to see Pettersson take that shot rather than, you know, looking for Mikheyev to complete the tap-in.
But he did it on the power play. He did have one shot off the wall.
This is his only shot of the night. Normally, yeah,
but that, well, maybe that's why it stood out. That was his only shot of the night. But right? That was a play where I was like, oh, normally he would kind of back up and do the off the back foot, look for another option, whether it's back up to Hughes or low. But, yeah, I thought he – and then he got through the neutral zone where he was tacking more north a couple times. So I agree with you, but I did like that shot, the one shot I really did like.
Yeah, and you know, you're right in terms of there isn't a lot to pick apart. Like the first 10 minutes of the game, right? Like, so we talked about the Canucks were loose, and they were fortunate. Like if they don't get a couple of bounces, a couple of saves from DeSmith, right? It could, like we mentioned, it could have been different. But outside those first 10 minutes, the Canucks had the territorial advantage, kind of generally speaking. And considering how the Canucks have now played their last few games, they had a huge, impressive comeback against Vegas. They controlled the game against Arizona, got goalied by Ingram a little bit, but obviously didn't do enough to get enough pucks by him, losing overtime that game. But in terms of their details, being hard to play against tonight, doing a lot of the right things, defending well, how positive is that in terms of a trend that two of the last three games against big-time opponents, they've been able to play a solid team game overall?
Yeah, it's really positive. I think you hear it a lot. It's hard to just turn the switch on when you get to playoffs. You want to be rolling on good habits. And then if you go back, even the ones we didn't like as much, Tocchet talked about how much they did like some of the details against Dallas and in L.A. and some of the losses in that stretch. So I think it's huge that they're doing that, and that just helps with team confidence. It's all about team confidence rolling into playoffs.
So the magic number is one. Any point gained or any point gained by the Canucks or point lost by the Oilers clinches the Pacific Division officially for Vancouver. With that said, the players' mindset: rust versus rest. Brett, do you maybe give some guys some maintenance days here before the playoffs begin with two games remaining in the division, all but clinched up?
Yeah, I would. It's definitely worth considering. Yeah. Right, like for a team like Edmonton, like if you watch the highlights they're showing in practice around, it's pretty obvious he's not that hurt.
Yeah,
but it translates back to the stars on this team, right? There's just guys that are gonna be And I don't know what the bumps and bruises are right now behind the scenes, but certain guys are going to log certain minutes. So if there's any fatigue whatsoever, or if there's any nagging injuries or sore, you know, hips, groins, whatever it is, take care of it now.
Yeah.
For sure. I don't think it's worth playing Calgary on Tuesday for, but definitely you still want to have that momentum. So I think maybe maintenance for one game, maybe make one game your last, like, you know, kind of like preseason where you have one game that's really your this is us game, and then one can be maintenance and get maybe guys like Juleson or something, like just a taste of the puck before postseason.
So is Scheffler closing it out or what?
Oh, man, I'm a Homer guy the whole way. Scheffler's so good, but I find him so boring. He's so good, it's so boring. But then it's hard to deny that he's incredible. He's automatic. I'm pulling Homer tomorrow.
He's like you in a long drive contest. Automatic.
Yeah, well, we haven't golfed in a year. Let's try it out now.
I've heard the legend of Brett Festerling, so I got to get out on the golf course and see what it all looks like. Hey, Brett.
Yeah, let's get out there.
I'm down. Listen, man, fantastic stuff as always. Hey, we have a couple more games to go in the season, but come the postseason, you're going to be involved in our playoff coverage as well. We can't wait for it, buddy. Fantastic stuff tonight, and we look forward to having a lot of fun in the postseason.
Yeah, I'm excited. Thank you.
You got it. That is Brett Festerling calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor tonight. A 3-1 Canucks victory in Edmonton over the Oilers, and an impressive one at that, especially considering how the Edmonton Oilers started. They got saves from Casey DeSmith and then closed that game out. Keep getting your reaction into our text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Jay Siegel and Kitz says, fantastic third period of hockey, most playoff style game the Canucks have seen this year. Two playoff teams exchanging huge blows. You can tell it's a big game. Canucks finally have meaningful games in April. They certainly do, because the real playoff games are just around the corner. And, you know, like we talked about, the Canucks have had such a fantastic season. Mm-hmm. Close it out in style. Like, yeah, we don't need you to win the West even. We don't need you to go out and win the President's Trophy. You already have home ice in the first round. You already have clinched the playoffs. So I mean, you've already accomplished the two main things you set out to accomplish, right? Sure, you want to have home ice advantage as long as possible in the playoffs, but really what teams want is make the playoffs and can you get home ice for the first round.
Yeah.
And everything beyond that is kind of out of your control. Like, who knows what kind of happens, right? So the Canucks already have that done. But considering they've kind of gone wire to wire leading the Pacific Division, just take it home. And it looks like they're on the verge of completing that now. And I think that's a really important factor. And for all the fear a lot of Canucks fans had about their team, how they're trending and everything, you should feel a little bit better about how the Canucks are playing down the stretch and the fact that they don't look to be, you know, blowing that division lead, which they've had for much of the season.
You know, the Canucks, they had a 12-point lead on the Oilers in December, on December 1st. They had a 12-point lead on the Oilers January 1st, a 12-point lead on the Oilers February 1st, 11-point lead as of March 1st, and then it really only started to get dicey here in the last couple of weeks as the Oilers just stayed so hot for so much of the I guess final 75% of the season, because they were so bad for the first quarter of it. But you know, the Canucks did the job.
Yeah.
They've essentially clinched the division. Magic number is at 1. They should be able to close this up on Tuesday against the Calgary Flames and make Thursday's game against the Jets essentially irrelevant. You know, it's been a brilliant season. Nobody expected, I mean, everybody freaked out on me at the beginning of the year when I had the Canucks in a top 3 spot in the Pacific.
Yeah.
And I mean, even I, who was at that time apparently a Looney Tune for having the Canucks in a top 3 spot in the Pacific.
I remember when, so I had the Canucks making the playoffs as a wild card team. You had the Canucks finishing 3rd in the division. And people were coming at us on social media. You homers.
Bunch of homers. They're not even going to make the playoffs. And here they are winning. I even undersold them.
Yeah, we still undersold them.
Still undersold them as a 107-point team with 2 games to go. One of the best seasons in franchise history. Here we are. And a win away from a 50-win season. You know, there's not much left to prove.
Yeah.
At this point, after tonight's
win, regular
season,
yeah.
There's just not much left for this team to prove.
And yeah, Edmonton did not have Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
Sure, right? I mean, Vancouver didn't have Demko, but it's not like they missed him with how Casey DeSmith played tonight, yeah. right? But yes, yeah, so they didn't have Connor McDavid. But all you can do is play the opponents you have in front of you. And we're at a point now where we're like, you know, whoever you're playing, just collect the points for you to finish off on the division. But in terms of what you can prove, the playoffs are what matters.
Yeah.
Right? And game one, it's going to be a new slate, new season. And I'm not sure they're playing now, good or bad, is overly indicative of mm-hmm. what we're going to see. The thing that I want to see more than anything is, can you flash your top form when late in the season so you feel comfortable that it's still in your locker? And they did against Vegas, like one of their more impressive games of the season. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would go as far as saying it was their best win of the year, but you can certainly make the argument for it or rank it amongst the better wins considering everything that kind of happened. But they showed in that game and in parts of tonight's game, the Canucks that showed us what they can be earlier this season, they still have that game in them.
Yeah.
And if you showcase that and then finish the division, you know, and win the division, I'm not going to be too concerned about their form or what's going on because the playoffs are a new animal anyways. Like, none of us know what's going to happen in that first round, but it's just about taking care of business, and that's the best thing that we've seen here down the stretch.
You know, tonight I thought for the back half of the first, the Canucks were pretty much the better team. Still gave up a couple of big chances to the Oilers, but they were the better team. Got the first goal, and then for much of the second, basically the first 17 minutes of the second period, they were the better team. They didn't give the Oilers much of a sniff at their net. They held them to under 10 shot attempts for much of that second period at 5-on-5. You know, it was the Canucks we've kind of become used to seeing. A team that suppresses their opponents, doesn't allow much room, doesn't allow much space on the ice, doesn't allow them any good looks at the net. And that's who this team is. I know I've seen some texts coming in. They don't generate enough chances to be considered a contender, and that's fair. You can say that they generate fewer chances than most of the other contenders in the Western Conference, if not all of them. But
yeah,
they also,
I don't know if it's as bad as people think, chance generation-wise, when you compare it to other teams.
It's not as bad, but also they defend better.
Yes.
So which part of that argument do you want? You know, for a lot of the time, people say defense wins championships. Well, now you want to change and move the goalposts. This team defends better than most other teams in the National Hockey League.
No, they do.
And that is their separating factor going into the playoffs. They flashed it for much of tonight's game against the Oilers. Yes, without McDavid, but you know what? They did play three games with 97 in the lineup against the Oilers earlier this season, and they won all three of those games too. So,
yeah.
You know, they've been a good team, and they have earned this Pacific Division title. They've been the best team on merit from beginning to end in the division, and they're going to close out this division title in style.
Absolutely. A lot of reaction on the text inbox. OP from Fleetwood, how about a shout-out to all the Canucks fans in Edmonton? Love the Go Canucks Go chants in Alberta. Yeah, the Canucks fans there made a lot of noise, and we usually see them show up, and we had a few text messages from fans that were in Edmonton Canucks fans talking about how much fun they had and how much they loved the vibe, and good on you guys for being out there and enjoying watching your team win in Edmonton against the Oilers. Gavin from the Island says, fire me up. Great game by the Canucks depth players tonight. That's what we need going into the playoffs. Casey the GOAT was a brick wall too, is what the text message from Gavin from the Island says.
Casey the GOAT, Casey the Save. we've heard it all. He has really turned the reputation that he built with some of his previous losses. You know, being a goaltender is, I'd say, pretty tough on a lot of these guys, right?
Yeah.
How quickly a fan base can turn on you. Early in the season, everybody loved DeSmith because of how good he was. It seemed like the Canucks were winning a lot of the games that he was filling in for Thatcher Demko. And then when he has to fill in regularly with Demko out due to injury, things start to go a little haywire for him. But he was brilliant tonight. And, you know, given how he played in the first 10 minutes, some of the big saves he had to make, the biggest reason why the Canucks won the game tonight was how Casey DeSmith played in that first period.
Yeah, Casey was fantastic tonight, and good for him too. Somebody texted in just a while ago and said, good on Casey DeSmith. Nice to see him have a strong game. I feel good for the guy. And yeah, you do, especially with, you know, the struggles he had. You could tell it was getting to him as well. And like Kevin Woodley mentioned on Twitter, having a bit of a reset, having Silas play a couple of games, working with Ian Clark, kind of got the Smiths game back to where it needs to be. And, you know, he's one of those guys that will kick out some rebounds, and he did again tonight. But the Canucks did a good job of defending in front of him and clearing guys, taking bodies. Now, the one time they didn't, it was when Quinn Hughes and Hronek left Brown and Evander Kane net front, and then Kane, they had a double tip on it. That was poorly defended. But generally speaking, they were really good defending in front of their net, and I think that was a big difference, too, to help Casey DeSmith out after making that initial save. All right, keep your text coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll hit more as the show goes on here, but let's go to the phone board, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We go to Bella Bella, where we have Don on the line. Don, thanks for calling in, pal. What are your thoughts tonight?
Well, hey there. Yeah, I loved the win in Edmonton. But Mikheyev is snake bit. I would like to see him taking out of the top six. He's hurting the other skilled forwards that can do damage up there. And this is my wish for the playoffs. We got to put the lotto line back together, and all the lines would follow suit with Bluger centering the Garland-Joshua line. And Mikheyev can just go down the fourth line and do his thing down there. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks a lot.
All good. Thanks for the phone call. That's Don and Bella Bella. And we get that a lot, reuniting the lotto line. I think part of the success they had tonight with their overall team game outside of the first period, and especially with how Lindholm matched up against Draisaitl, and you know, they played over 7 minutes against Lindholm, played against Draisaitl tonight, that line kept them to two high danger scoring chances while he was on the ice.
Pretty good.
Now, clearly they lost a territorial battle because it's Leon freaking Draisaitl. And Leon, I know people were criticizing him. Some people, Woody texted in and others texted in and said, hey, he's not that good without his Batman, McDavid. I actually thought he was doing everything humanly possible to drag that team into the fight tonight. I thought he was creating chances, driving towards the net, taking shots. He wasn't dominant by any stretch in that sense, but I thought Draisaitl was easily their most effective player. But give that Lindholm line credit. And Lindholm, when he's at his best, can be a high-level two-way player. He's a guy who got Selke votes. You know, Dean Abbotsford says, I take back everything I said about Lindholm, the way he played tonight. Like, that's fantastic. Obviously, you want to see more of it, but you have to give Lindholm a lot of credit, too, for how him and his line really prevented Draisaitl when they were up against them to generate enough quality scoring chances.
If you're Rick Tocchet, tonight's game only emboldens you into wanting to keep Pettersson, Miller, and Lindholm on separate lines, centering their own lines. You know, it opens up so many other opportunities. I thought Pettersson and that line generated good scoring chances. They just all happened to fall on Mikheyev's stick.
Yeah, and that's what makes that performance seem less dominant, right?
It's, you know, if Mikheyev starts finishing a couple of those, then teams are going to have to respect him a little bit more, and maybe it opens up some space for Pettersson on the ice. But in general, like, I thought it worked, right? You know, you got the goal from Suter. You got Lindholm doing his thing, shutting down the other team's top center in the game in Leon Draisaitl, and Pettersson carried a line to at least a territorial advantage where they had some chances. And on the lotto line, I know people want to see it back together. I know how good they were in 2019, 2020, but that is the past. And it hasn't worked in the same way since that time. And even if you look at their minutes together this year, of any forward group that's played 100 minutes or more together for the Vancouver Canucks, that line, the lotto line, has like one of the worst goals for percentages, at least by expected goals. They've scored 11, given up 7, so they're at least positive on the results, but expected goals was under 40% when they were on the ice together at 5-on-5.
Yeah.
They didn't defend well together. They didn't mesh well together. They had those great few games when they first reunited them in New Jersey, and they scored a bunch of goals, but after that, it disappeared. And I know Rick Tocchet will go to it situationally in some games, and that's the best way to use the lotto line in my estimation, much like McDavid and Draisaitl spend most of their minutes apart now, but it is a cheat code. You know, we kill a penalty, McDavid and Draisaitl are fresh, let's throw them out there right after a team's just had a power play and we'll get McDavid and Draisaitl out there against their fourth line. You know, those are situations where maybe you load up in certain spots of a game, but other than that, I think we need to remove the idea that the Lotto line is ever going to be reunited for a long-term type of situation by this Canucks team.
Yeah, like Mike says, I disagree. If they fall behind, they need to go to the Lotto line. I'm not against, you know, loading them up at times situationally too, of course, right? Yeah. If you're on your front foot dictating, it's great having the depth. When you're trailing, you want to load your best players together. I'm not against that, you know. And if you're
down a goal in a playoff game,
you got to load your five best skaters and have to be out there.
You're basically shrinking your bench anyways to your top nine. And as the game whittles down, you're just going to throw out Pettersson, Miller, and Besser together all at once.
Yeah.
So I get those moments, but like to have it for a whole game, like even when Rick Tocchet's been asked about it, he's perturbed at the idea of keeping them together for long stretches of a game. It's very situational in his eyes, and I agree with it.
No, absolutely. A lot of reaction on the text inbox, 650-650. Tyler says, Canucks sweeping the Oilers is the reason they will take the Pacific. Hashtag facts only.
Yeah.
Well, true. Yeah, I mean, it's a big swing. Edmonton has 1 point against Vancouver in the games they played.
Yeah.
It's a massive swing. This one says, job's not done. Sounding like Kobe Bryant, the late, great Kobe Bryant, talking about the job not being done yet.
Magic number is one.
But it's not done. I get
Just beat Calgary on Tuesday. Celebrate with the fans. Fan appreciation night. Then you get to the playoffs.
I'm with you. Absolutely. All right. Keep getting your thoughts into our text inbox, 650-650. Grab a phone line, 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. Canucks with a 3-1 win over the Edmonton Oilers, and this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by the number 5 Orange. The game is over, but is your night really done? The number 5 is open. More coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode. This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Garland behind the net, can't come up with the puck. JT Miller top of the left circle, chops it back deep. Bouchard tried to play it behind his own net. Garland broke it up. Then Bouchard knocked him down from behind in a battle. The Oilers get it free, and Corey Perry flips it out to center, but it's gloved down by Myers, and the Canucks transition the other way. Myers into the Edmonton zone, center, he passed him, they score! Hugh Suter driving the middle, deflects it past Stuart Skinner, and the Canucks go up 2-0 with 9 minutes left in the second.
And this is a nice little tip. Myers looks like he's going to pass it to Suter early. Everybody kind of pauses. He ends up going wide instead, but then throws the late one to the middle, and Suter just deflects it. Again, low blocker on Skinner.
Pew Suter, the game-winning goal off a great feed from Tyler Myers. Canucks go on to win 3-1 over the Edmonton Oilers, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by the number 5 Orange on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah, Dan Riccio. Keep getting your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. An error for me, I have to correct, like Smoke City FC on Twitter pointed out very quickly. The Edmonton Oilers have 0 points against the Vancouver Canucks, not one. It's been a long season. I thought one of the games was an overtime victory. It was not. It was a 4-3 regulation victory for the Vancouver Canucks with Casey DeSmith between the pipes for that game, I believe it was.
Oilers homer sat, trying to give them more credit than they deserve. Unbelievable.
Well, it's not just
all that time in Edson, Alberta, you know? You're a changed man.
I will say, like, I don't have the I've always had a soft spot for the area because I lived out there and worked there. Not to say that I've been
soft spot as in like anytime I try to anytime I make a comment about Edmonton, Sat's like, you know,
it's not that bad.
It's not that bad.
Nice in January.
It's not that bad. I mean, listen, I have a lot of great
friends. -43, but it's, you know, it's a dry cold.
It's not that bad. No, 43 is horrible. It's really bad. It'll kill you. I made that mistake once and I almost died. It was not very fun. But I have fond memories from the area. So I will say, I don't look at Edmonton or the Oilers as nasty of outlook as a lot of fans have. And of course, remember the Sedins final game? The send-off they gave them. So I have some respect. And
yes,
McDavid's incredible, and their team is great. And Jordan Penticton says, got to give Hyman His Flowers as well as Leon look super dangerous at times this game. Can't wait for the playoffs. First round, Canucks in five, is what Jordan and Penticton says. And
Jordan doesn't even care who the Canucks opponent is. He's just Canucks in five.
Canucks in five. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
No, and you know, Bobby from the Docs texted in earlier. He says, regular listener, I think Vegas is the sleeping giant. I'm kind of glad we won't play them in the first round. Bobby from the Docs, big fan of the show. Always appreciate you, Bobby. And, you know, bit of a different outlook in terms of who to play. But it looks like, and let's take a quick look before we break the game down a bit more here on what this game means in the standings, especially with the out-of-town scoreboard. Well, because the Nashville Predators also won tonight, and so did the LA Kings, it makes it very, very difficult for Vegas to be able to finish ahead of Nashville in the standings. So right now, Vegas would max out at 100 points to win their final three games, and the tiebreaker would be in Nashville's favor anyways. They have 99 points. So if Nashville picks up one more point, there's no way Vegas is going to play Vancouver in the first round. So it looks like Vancouver's playing Nashville in round one, and that's the way it's going to look.
Vegas would have to win out to get to 100 points, So...
yeah, they have to win out, and Nashville would have to lose their final game of the season in regulation, which ends on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So it looks unlikely. And again, like, nothing, even the Canucks, you know, like, it's not over. They still have two games to go. Like, you know, Edmonton has three games remaining as well. So this isn't over yet. But right now, the odds are overwhelmingly in favor of Vancouver facing Nashville in round one.
Vegas is scheduled Colorado tomorrow, who will be on the second half of a back-to-back after losing 7-0 today. And Colorado essentially has nothing left to play for. They're pretty much locked into third spot in the Central Division. Chicago on Tuesday and at home to Anaheim on Thursday. So still, a bit of a cupcake schedule here for the Golden Knights, but they don't hold their own destiny. They look like they're going to finish in the second wild card spot. And the Canucks are very likely finishing first in the Pacific, but will not catch the Dallas Stars, who need just 1 point to clinch the Western Conference title.
Yes, absolutely. Lester from Sparky, Lester the Sparky from Qualicum says, boys, they got it done. Team is battling. What a year we've had, guys. Playoff style hockey, and we looked good this evening. So a lot of love for the Canucks and how they battle back to win this hockey game here tonight. But before we get to more of your reaction on the text inbox and on the phone boards, and we'll get you the thoughts of the Canucks head coach and players as soon as that becomes available to us, I did want to break down the goals real quick.
Yeah.
So you heard the goal coming in. Pugh Suter, great feed from Sam Lafferty. Sorry, from Tyler Myers off the blue line. Great tip by Pugh Suter. He gets a game-winning goal. But the first goal was scored JT Miller. I mean, sorry, it was Sam Lafferty from JT Miller and Nikita Zadorov. And it was a nice heads-up play by Zadorov that got Lafferty that chance. And something Lafferty hasn't done recently is grip it and rip it. And he does, and he finds it back of the net for his career-high 13th goal of the season.
Well, there's a couple of things on that play. You know, the Oilers get a half clear. The Canucks are regrouping in the neutral zone. But instead of taking their time with the regroup, Zadorov sees Lafferty coming off the bench, has speed through the neutral zone, and they just going and moving back north, downhill on the Oilers. And they're on their heels as Lafferty comes down the right wing. Miller is making the middle drive towards the front of the net. So Skinner is maybe worried about the pass coming into the middle. He doesn't cover his far post maybe as well as he could. And Lafferty picks his spot with a great shot. And I think a lot of it just starts because, well, the Canucks had, at the time, started to put some heavy shifts together in the second half of that first period. And the way Lafferty comes downhill on that, keeping the Oilers on their heels, especially when maybe they're thinking of, okay, the bell's coming, we're almost to the end of the first period here. It was just some of the staples were on display on that first goal for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and the type of thing you want to see, you mentioned middle drive stuff from JT Miller, who also kicked out of the play, but a heads-up play from Zadorov. And it was against the run of play, like we kind of talked about. The first period, it was Casey DeSmith standing on his head. 5-on-5, Edmonton had 10 high-danger chances, only 2 for Vancouver. But the rest of the game...
10 felt like a lot. Honestly, like 10 felt like more than I counted.
Well, the thing was, they had a couple of rebound opportunities early net front chances, and if you get 2 or 3 whacks at it, at one chance, that counts as a few high dangers, right? Now, you can only score one goal per sequence. So my gripe sometimes with that stuff is, yeah, there on a single sequence or a single shift, a team might get four high danger chances. We can only score once.
Yes.
Right? So it's like, you know, yes, I get it. It might count for like an extra goal in a bit, but if you think of it in game flow, like you only score once on a sequence, right? So
every rebound chance counts as a high danger, but if you would have scored on the first rebound chance, then...
Yes, and now over the totality of the season, those numbers will give you a very clear indication. Game to game, there is always context to keep in mind. But nonetheless, even if you say a few went to Edmonton's favor because of those, they still outplayed Vancouver. And after that, however, the Canucks only gave up four high danger chances. They gave up 10 in the first and only four the final 40 minutes. So they played a lot better down the stretch, the final 40. And it was Dakota Joshua getting the empty net goal. We mentioned the Pew Suter goal. And honestly deserved, considering that line went head-to-head against Draisaitl. They get the opportunity, they cash in. It was a nice little cherry on top for that line for the work they did against Draisaitl.
If I had a gripe about the Canucks' third period, it would be that they were maybe a little too comfortable in just flipping the puck out of their own end, right? Instead of trying to connect on a breakout, holding on to pucks, as Tocchet likes to say, trying to put some pressure on the Oilers going the other way. Instead, they just invited pressure from the Oilers and parked the bus a little bit, if I can borrow a soccer term yet again and perturb our listeners yeah. just a little bit more.
Well, you use a baseball term earlier. It's almost like home plate area really reach. So now you're doing soccer and
yes.
stuff. Yes.
I like to cross-sport analysis. Yes. That's what it's all about. And yes, we've heard coaches say home plate area anyway. So stop it. You know what I mean.
Dan's saying deal with it.
Shot attempts only for the we're at 8 for the Canucks. Yeah. So yeah, I'd like them to be a little bit more aggressive while defending a lead, but I was also really impressed with their in-zone defending in the third period.
Yeah.
They didn't give the Oilers much, right? Even with all the time they spent in their own end, the Oilers only had two high danger chances in the period. So they really kept them to the outside. You know, there was a couple of times when Draisaitl was looking for the cross-ice pass and just weren't able to connect on it because the Canucks defended it well, or the pass had to be so precise that it just wasn't able to connect. There was a lot of good things about the way the Canucks defended in the third period in their own end, even if I would like them to be a little bit more ambitious with how they defend a one-goal lead in-game.
No, I don't necessarily disagree with that. The one thing, and we mentioned this earlier, that played in their favor, I thought, was Edmonton's lack of speed. Even on the regroups, you could tell as soon as the puck came out, the Edmonton Oilers puck carriers oftentimes retreated back because they had to buy time for their forwards to get back to the blue line and tag up again. It wasn't as simple as throwing it back in. And I think that lack of pace just made it really hard for Edmonton to be able to get back as soon as the Canucks got it out. So I agree. I want to see them be on the front foot a bit more. I do think game plan-wise, if you're in distress a little bit or under pressure, that's a better strategy against this Edmonton team without McDavid than it normally would be. If McDavid's there, like, you're terrified of you doing that. But I thought it kind of worked out a lot better tonight. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll hit more as the show goes on. But let's go to the phone boards and let's go across the pond, the Atlantic Ocean. So we go across North America, across the Atlantic, and we go to Scandinavia, Denmark, where we have James on the line. James, thanks for calling in from Denmark, man. What are your thoughts tonight?
Hey, Dan. Hey, Sat. Huge, huge fan. I listen to you guys every day.
Awesome.
I tried calling
in
the other day. Me and my daughters, I've got Ayla and Selma here who are 7 and 5. We watch the Canucks. We're super fans. We're so excited for the playoffs. Huge win tonight. My daughter, Ayla, who's 7, has a question.
Okay.
Do you think Eddie Peterson has an injury, a secret injury?
Oh, okay. You know what? That's a fantastic question. James, do you have any other thoughts here before we let you go? No, I think that we just dropped.
No, I'm just
That's it?
So excited. So excited to have Vancouver back in the playoffs. I've been following the Canucks. I grew up in Vancouver. It's my hometown. Moved to Copenhagen 10 years ago, but followed the Canucks religiously. And just happy that they're back in the playoffs, man.
Fantastic stuff. You know what? Beautiful family. Thanks for calling in. Enjoy the Canucks from overseas and hopefully some good times coming up as well. Thanks so much for your phone call.
Love it. Canucks super fans all around the globe.
I love
to see it.
And to answer the question, and it's a good question. A lot of people have been, you know, wondering, is Elias Pettersson nursing an injury? I have reason to believe he has some sort of injury. Now, newsflash, late in the season, most players have something they're playing through.
You know, Brock Besser was taking maintenance days all week, and I thought he had a great game tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of it is you have to fight through it. I do think something's going on there with Pettersson. I'm not ready to say, you know, excuse the poor efforts at times and excuse the fact that he's not playing well. And yes, he's a guy who's had some injuries and that has, you know, hurt his game at times. It's something he has to overcome. But yeah, if I had to wager on him having some sort of ailment, yes. I don't think it's as debilitating as perhaps people may believe because of his struggles or relative struggles, so to speak. And I do think he's under the microscope. And people were texting in about the money again, you know, 11.6. Yes. And Jeff and Langley was texting in saying he needs to be a lot better. We had, Jay and Poco saying, put Hoglander in a spot on the power play. He's not good on the power play anymore. But it's like he scored a game-tying goal against Arizona. He had a shot on the power play that almost went in tonight.
Yeah.
The power play's been clicking at over 30%. I mean, I get it. Sometimes we can be critical of his game, but like, to me, that's not it. You know what I mean? But however, yes, you want to see him level up a bit more. And to yet again reiterate the question, which was, do you think he's playing through some sort of injury? Yes, to some degree. I don't know if it's bad enough where you can sit here and say, hey, this is the best that he can do. I still think he can be better.
I felt like Pettersson's game has been coming lately, and he scored the goal the other night to tie it up. Had assists in three straight games before that. There was some reason to believe, and even the way that he was carrying himself, carrying play, that Pettersson was headed in a better direction. I don't think tonight was a step back. I still thought that they carried play offensively. I don't think the high dangers that is listed, he's not listed for a high danger chance 4 in his time on ice at 5-on-5. I think that's unfair to that line because, you know, if Mikheyev gets his stick on a couple of those, then maybe they do have a couple of high danger chances 4. So you can't just look at the numbers and say, ah, Pettersson was terrible. But there is want to see Pettersson be more threatening on the ice than yes. He has been most of the time lately. And I don't think that's unfair to say, but you're at a stage now, 2 games left in the season. I'm not sure it really matters. So if there is an injury to Pettersson of some kind, you should be able to get a point against Calgary without him.
Yeah.
So if there is something that's bad enough, yeah, sure, give him the maintenance day. Give him the rest until the end of the season, until the playoffs start. Because ultimately, all that matters now in the Canucks' final 2 games with their magic number to clinch the division at 1 is, yes, still doing that, making sure they get that 1 point, or the Oilers lose that 1 point. But it's being as healthy as possible for game 1 of the playoffs.
Yes.
That is the ultimate priority for this team right now. And should be their biggest priority over these next 2 games.
I know, 100%. And get to the playoffs healthy, take care of business, and the Canucks are on the verge of doing that as well. 2 games remaining on the campaign, Calgary and closing the season off in Winnipeg against the Jets. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to more of your text messages coming up in a few moments, but let's go back to the phone board, 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. And let's go to Vancouver, where we have Harry on the line. Harry, thanks for calling in, man. What are your thoughts tonight?
Oh, hey, guys. I just had a little, like, theory. Like, I'm trying to think through things here. Either Tockett's a bit stubborn or not bright, which I don't think he is, or he's just like a master savant and holding the key lineup for the playoffs going forward. But to me, the Canucks need to go 11-7. And you have Lotto line first, second line Lindholm, Hoglander, Suter, third line's the third line, fourth line Lafferty, Mikheyev, with the centers just rotating through. Like, to me, that's like the best line you could have. I'm not sure why they're not doing that ahead of the game here, or they're just trying to play through the scenarios. Like, I don't know what you guys think. Like, is that the best lineup we could have?
Thanks for the phone call. I mean, like we mentioned a bit earlier on the show and also on the pregame show, I actually think I'm not as big on the Lotto line because mm-hmm. I don't think they've been as dangerous as people think. Like, they scored, obviously went on a bit of a run. But I also think in terms of length in the playoffs, having 3 lines that can go, to me, is far more effective than loading up and having 1 line and then paring things down. Now, like we mentioned too, I'm not against the notion of having a Lotto line, then having Lindholm play with Garland and Joshua. So all of a sudden, you know, that can play as a second line. And if you go, say, Bluger, put Cole, Bluger, Mikheyev together as a yeah. duo, you can throw what?
Hoglander.
Hoglander on that line if you want, or put Hoglander with Pugh Suter and a Sam Lafferty, for instance. That way you have a bit of more of a scoring threat. So I can understand the logic behind it. But I think if you want to go toe-to-toe against best teams in the NHL in the playoffs, you need to have three lines that can go. And your best chance of having three lines that can go is having those guys split up. And as we mentioned before, situationally, sure, you can throw them out there if you're trailing in games or whatever. But I actually think the lineup to win with tonight was what I would want to see heading into the postseason, at least when you're leading and playing, when the game is tied in those situations.
Hard pass for me. Like, all of these lineup combinations just, they don't really excite me all that much. Like, I get it. Lotto line is fun. You put all of your best players up on one line, but guess what that does to the rest of your lineup? It makes it a lot easier to coach against, a lot easier to match up against in the playoffs. And guess what? Playoffs are about matchups. You're going up against the same team over and over and over again. They're going to pick apart every little bit of your game. So you need as few holes as possible. And that's why I love the lineup that they had tonight. I get it. Mikheyev's got one goal in his last 48 games. It's not good enough for a top six forward, but it's what you have as a roster right now. So deal with it and hope that Mikheyev finds a little bit of his scoring touch. For as much as, yes, one goal in his last 48 games, he had 10 goals through the first 28 games of the season. So he's either not that guy or not this guy. He's probably somewhere in the middle. He's going to go on a streak eventually. He's around the puck. He's around the net. Hopefully it happens. Hopefully it comes soon, especially with the playoffs here. But the Lotto line just, I get it. It's fun, but it's just not based in reality of something that's going to be a thing for this team.
Unless you're in a position where your backs are against the wall a little bit. Like I said, if you're on the front foot, you want to dictate. But if you're, again, I'm not against doing things depending on what's going on in your situation. But I think if you're trying to dictate and control games, that you're better off that way.
I'd be more inclined to have Lindholm move up to play with Pettersson and Hoglander than I would put the Lotto line together.
Yeah, and even that with me, like, I would still rather have Lindholm play his on his own line because of what we mentioned in the playoffs. And this person texted in and said, we needed it to Foley. The Canucks clearly were trying to get another higher-end scorer. I mean, Gensel was the guy they're trying to do, couldn't do that, try to get to Foley.
Management essentially told us where they think their biggest hole is.
Yeah.
With what they weren't able to do at the deadline. They weren't able to get Gensel. They weren't able to get to Foley. They told us that they knew where their issue was. Missing a top six forward. They weren't able to get that done. They felt the prices were too high. They couldn't get it across the line. Carolina had no interest in what the Canucks were offering compared to, Pittsburgh had no interest in what the Canucks were offering compared to Carolina for Jake Gensel. So you missed out. And it's unfortunate, but it's the reality of the situation. Does that mean the Canucks should shrivel up and save it for next year? No, because they still got a really good team. And what their advantage is now, if you have Miller, Pettersson, Lindholm, and Blueger all on separate lines, there is no center that you could get caught out on and worry about.
Yeah. That matters in the playoffs.
That matters a lot in the playoffs. You know, so yeah, maybe against Nashville, it's not the biggest deal, but, you know, if Philip Forsberg ends up with a shift against Teddy Blueger, you're not freaking out about it if you're Rick Tocchet. Like, it's going to happen. But we trust Teddy Blueger's defensive mindset. He's our number one guy over the boards for every penalty kill. So, yeah, we're okay there. We can match up the Lindholm line against other teams' top lines. That's going to work. We know we can do that with Miller. We know we can do that with... This is the point of having all four of those guys on separate lines. You're not going to get caught out against other teams' top lines and worry about your defensive matchup in those moments.
The Canucks are not a perfect team yet, right? And because they lack another winger, it creates like a top six winger, really, ideally. It creates some imbalances. So it's not going to be a perfect combination either way. You're either, you know, sacrificing a little bit on one of the wings in your top six, or you're sacrificing your bottom six because you can't have as much length in your lineup, right? So it's imperfect, and when you have imperfect solutions, I can understand why you can look at it a few different ways, right? But you and I, obviously, we agree on having Lindholm be down the middle as opposed to being on the wing.
And the other thing, a couple of texts coming in, have Lafferty over Mikheyev and some other things on that. Tocchet has mentioned this a couple of times, and look, it's the way most coaches set their line combos now. It's not so much about the trio, it is about duos. Yeah. And Tockett's duos, the way he sees it, because of the way he's deployed this lineup for much of the season, most of the season, Miller Besser, Pettersson Höglander, Joshua Garland. You know, if Mikheyev's not going for a certain amount of time, guess what? He's going to be quick on the trigger to move him down away from Pettersson and Höglander, put Lafferty up there, put somebody else up there. Same goes for Suter with Miller and Besser. Like, we're probably going to see it change quite a bit. But I think the way they set their lines up tonight is what they imagine it looking like for game one of the playoffs.
Yeah, and a lot of Mikheyev support coming in now. Calling it now, Mikheyev will put this team on his back in round two is what one text message says. And Carmichael from Burnaby says, I feel like Mikheyev is going to tear it up once the playoffs start. ACL surgery is tough to recover from. He's showing some signs of his old self. His fresh start in the playoffs may be exactly what he needs. That's Carmichael from Burnaby texting in. All right, we'll get to more of your texts coming up in a moment, but let's take one more phone call before we hit the break. We'll take more of your reaction on the other side, plus audio from Canucks players and the head coach. But let's go to the phone boards. And as I bring it up right now, you can play the Jeopardy music right now while you wait. No, let's go to Elliot in New West. Elliot, thanks for calling in. Now, what are your thoughts here tonight?
Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing great, man.
Fantastic.
I spoke to the guy who took the phone calls there earlier, and we were talking about kind of perspective and like how exciting it is to be a Canucks fan a year, like think of where we were like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So many questions, so much going on. But what I was kind of getting to is how short our memories are. Earlier this season, like what games, and like I forget, I didn't look this up. I'm like mid dog walk right now. Hold on.
What kind of dog do you have?
He's a boxer staffy man.
Oh, what an amazing boy. All right.
And he's a boat anchor at the best of times. So, yeah, so when we played Edmonton earlier this year, were the matchups not very similar? Like, were we not, like, because we rolled over them in the one game there, but.
Well, Edmonton is a completely different team today than they were at that point
earlier this
season.
Year.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean,
not like with who's on the roster, but just the way they play and how they're playing.
And that's what I mean. And that's what I was getting at with, sorry, buddy on the phone there, are the way we play, since he's come in here, since this coaching regime has come in here, like they have just changed the angles, the aggressiveness, like the activation of the defense. Like you see it all tonight. Like it was firing, like it looked great. So I guess my question is kind of like, do we not like have the confidence in that? Like I heard one guy earlier say, you know, like he's kind of questioning that too. Like this coach, man, he's not stupid. And I think he's holding some cards up his sleeve still, like with the way the guys are playing. Mm-hmm. But I would be curious to go back. And my question to you is like, when you guys are, you know, kind of doing your homework before the game for a game like we're playing Edmonton. Okay, you guys haven't seen them for most of the season. If you guys go back and watch any of the videotape, do you also look to that and then compare how they played then to how they play now?
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the phone call, Elliot in New West on Edmonton. I think Edmonton, and one of the things we talked about Edmonton earlier this season, I think the question was on Edmonton, right? Like how they changed their pre-scout.
Even on Vancouver, if they've changed. And the reality is I think both teams have evolved quite a bit from the way they were early in the season to where they are now.
They have. Now, Edmonton, one thing they've really cleaned up, they were generating good scoring chances. They were giving up horrible chances off the rush. You didn't see the Canucks have any rush chances against them. The first few games, they had a bunch of rush chances. The first game, obviously, they were making really bad mistakes in their own zone, blown coverages. I know guys repeating mistakes. You know how Tocchet mentions if one guy makes a mistake, the second guy can't make a mistake. You'd see that happen consistently, especially in their own zone. But they still created a lot of offense. But in their own zone defending, like we talked about this, we're like, yeah, well, look at the chances they had. They outchanced Vancouver, but you're telling me that the 3 2-on-1s Vancouver had are not more quality than the chances Oilers were creating because of the quality that was going the other way. That's not happening in their game anymore. I think when the Canucks were at their best that first game against Edmonton, it wasn't quite peak Canuck best hockey of the season, but it showed you a glimpse of what they could become, and they kind of become as the season went on, which was a high-pressure team that's very good defensively, that clears the front of the net really well, good line changes, very good disciplined hockey team. They've honed in on those things, and I think they've actually generated more offense chances, but haven't converted on. I think the Canucks team game has evolved and gotten much stronger since the beginning of the season. They're not scoring, obviously, as much. And Edmonton, I think their biggest thing they've done is clean up how poor they were in their own zone.
Yeah. Not just in their own zone, but their puck management.
Yeah.
Some of the pinches that they would make. Evan Bouchard was a turnstile early in the season. And there was that 6-2 game early in the season that Vancouver won, the third meeting between the two. Bouchard got called out for not hustling back on a play where he coughed up the puck at the blue line, and there's a two-on-one odd man rush going back the other way. And it was just over and over and over again, these things were happening to the Oilers. They couldn't get a save. They were also giving up way too many high-danger chances, way too many odd man rushes going back the other way. They were a mess. They looked like the Boudreaux Canucks at the end of the Boudreaux era, where it was just like, you know, make all kinds of turnovers at the offensive blue. Puck management was terrible. They weren't playing like a team. They were playing as a bunch of individuals, and it was a complete, total disaster. It wasn't hockey. It was a mess. So what they are now is very different. But what we've seen with the Canucks, they've honed in on their defensive game. They've started to generate more offensively, even if it's still not at a level I am overly confident with. They've had to do it differently as the season's gone on and evolve, because they aren't getting as many rush chances. You know how you say teams start to buckle up and they really tighten up in the second half of the season? Well, teams aren't giving up odd man rushes in the way that they were early in the season, especially when you're playing better teams. They're making sure they got three guys above the puck. They're not giving up those 3-on-2s. And the Canucks, they didn't get a ton of rush chances early in the season, but they like converted on 30 to 35% of them. It was just insane. They would convert every big chance that they got early in the season. And so, yeah, the offense has dissipated a little bit, but they've also had to evolve their offense as the season's gone on.
Yeah, they have. Now, getting to net is something they want to see them do more, and that's going to play off more in the playoffs as well. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. You can grab a phone line as well. We'll get to more of your reaction on the other side. Plus, we'll hear from the head coach, Rick Tocchet. That's next after a 3-1 Canucks win over the Oilers in Edmonton. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by the number 5 Orange, a Vancouver legend. They've got sports too. More next on Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now here's Dreisaitl, back to the Vancouver line on left wing. Rink wide pass, right circle. Bouchard, high slot, stopped by DeSmith. Rebound in front is clear for the goal mouth by Soucy. Bouchard gets it back. High slot, Ekholm. A long drive, another save by DeSmith. And Soucy gets it to the near boards.
Casey DeSmith strong between the pipes tonight. Canucks win 3-1 over the Oilers in Edmonton, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll hit more of your comments, and as the show goes on, Nav in Edmonton says, what a solid effort from the boys. This is what it's going to take to win playoff games. Lindholm is going to be very useful in the postseason. That line played a really solid two-way game. I'm in Edmonton, and it feels good rubbing a season sweep in Oilers fans' faces, LOL. So that's a Nav having fun in Edmonton. Good on him. All right, we are going to get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach coming up in a moment, but let's take a phone call before we do that, and let's go to Richmond where we have Sam on the line. Sam, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, Sat, how's it going?
Great, man. How are you?
Good. Casey DeSmith just played unreal tonight. Like, he was really, really good. It's funny that some of the Canucks fans were worried, and it rightly so. I mean, he hadn't been playing for good the last couple of days, but no, DeSmith was really good. Our bottom six was really, really good. Lafferty, I thought, had a really good game. I thought, I'm trying to remember who was it. I noticed Hoglander a lot. I noticed, obviously, Joshua a lot, Garland. They're really, really good. And, you know, I'm just really happy that, you know, touch wood, that the Canucks are 1 point away from winning the division. And it's good. It's good to feel like that instead of last year in the last 10 years, as you guys are mentioning. So, but other than that, no, really, really good play against the Oilers. The Oilers really didn't have much. They had that one goal that was double deflected, which was maybe a high stick. But no, other than that, the bottom six really, really played well. And Casey really, really played well tonight. And hopefully the next game and get one more point and clinch the division. Thanks, Zach. Have a good night.
Hey, thanks, Sam. That's Sam in Richmond calling in. And yeah, deserves props, Casey DeSmith does. And considering the struggles he was going through, and we had some debates, some spirited debates for hypothetical questions about who should play in the playoffs if Thatcher Demko gets injured. Is it Casey DeSmith? Is it Arthur Shilovs? And only in Vancouver are you going to have passionate debates about hypothetical situations for your second and third string goalie.
Yes.
But I understood why those questions kind of came up. You know, DeSmith was struggling. But one of the points I maintained throughout the whole process was, yes, DeSmith has had some struggles. The degree of difficulty for Shilovs has not been very high in most of his starts, the way he's played. And he hasn't been perfect either. You saw it against Arizona, too. And I pumped the brakes on he's necessarily better than Casey DeSmith. He could be down the road. Next year, I want Shilovs to fight for the backup spot here. I don't want to overpay DeSmith to come back. But I'm not sure that right now DeSmith is worse than Shilovs. And I think tonight he showed why he has gained some confidence from his teammates and his head coach. And, you know, somebody said, can you please talk about the hug after the game? Yeah. Thatcher Demko in a suit after DeSmith walked off his interview. He gave him a massive beer hug. And
Jeremy Swayman ain't ever getting that kind of a hug from Thatcher Demko.
Never. Sure. The coach was very happy. So he's one of those guys you're happy to see do well. But, you know, to give him credit, he's been good for the Canucks so far this season, and he bounced back big tonight.
He was great. You know, a couple of really big saves. There was a big save on Bouchard early in the first period. And I think the Canucks didn't really wake up until that big stop. And it sort of got the Canucks into gear because they put together a couple heavy shifts right after that big save on Bouchard in the first. And as far as the caller Sam mentioned, you know, the bottom six was really good. We've talked a lot about Lindholm, Garland, and Joshua. I mean, Garland had seven shots, led the team for the night, but did not find the back of the net. Had a couple of really great A's, including one in the second when he was set up by Lindholm right in front of the net. But the Bluger, Podkolzin, and Lafferty fourth line, like they played well. I mean, They didn't have to do a ton, but as a fourth line energy line that did the job and didn't get caught out, didn't give up too many big chances, they were on point for what they had to do and what was asked of them.
Yeah, Podkolzin did a really good job on a lot of clears, then fighting through neutral zone and also getting the puck in deep. And hey, I know it's small things you're talking about, those are things that matter. And I thought
little things pots.
They do. Little things pots. And he's coming through. He's not getting a ton of points, but the little things he's excelling at. All right, we'll get to more reaction coming up in a moment, but let's get the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Here is Rick Tocchet in Edmonton after a 3-1 win over the Oilers.
Yeah, it was like a grind type of game, all hands on deck. Really happy for Smitty, played really well for us. he came in there and gave us a great game.
Can you walk us kind of through your day a little bit? Because Mike stood here X amount of hours ago and said, you know, it's your game time decision. And I think, I don't know if I was the only one, but I thought, boy, you know, it seems like quite a trip to come in, especially if you're not feeling well. But maybe just why you decided, hey, if I can do it, let's do it.
Well, some of my former buddies were saying it's the Oiler flu. Because I lost in 85 here and 87. Just a little bit of a, you know, it's gone through our staff a little bit. So, yeah, I got a bunch of meds. I'm fine. It's not contagious. Don't worry about it. It's okay.
But winning can be.
Yeah.
So a little bit about that and trying to finish off the division and then go from there.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's a tough building to come. They don't lose very often here. To come in here, you know, only let them score one goal. It's a, you know, It's credit to a lot of guys. I thought defensively we were good. They had their chances too. I mean, you got to respect that. But, you know, like I said, Smitty was good. We had some timely goals. A couple games left before the playoffs start. So this is a good kind of a test drive for us for come to the next playoffs, you know, when the playoffs start.
Winning the division. I know it's not something that people are pushing themselves 10% extra hard in the summer to accomplish, but what does it mean to you and this group?
Well, we haven't. It's not over yet.
Right.
So I'm not going to answer that question. is there wood here? I'm going to change
fair
myself.
Enough. That was a trap.
But listen. Anytime you know, anytime you play late in the season, meaningful games is a lot. That's something that this franchise wanted for a long time, and these are the games we need. So it's we got a big one on Tuesday.
You get the Sam goal after a first period where maybe your start hadn't been
right.
Perfect. And from there, your team's just so comfortable grinding clock and killing the game in those situations. What's it a credit to?
Well, the first seven, I think for 7-8 minutes, they had a couple of those high tip shots, and I thought Casey made a couple, so you know, that was big for us. And then I think our last five in the first kind of gave us confidence, and then I thought the second we were better. So, I'd credit that first 7 minutes, Casey. Like, there's some high tips they had that, you know, they go in, you know, maybe it's a different game.
Does it mean anything to you that holding those leads, the way your club seems to be able to sort of replicate that formula, is that something that should give you confidence going into the postseason?
Well, I think all year we've been kind of our mode of being able to protect leads, grind it out. So that's, you know, that's one thing that the guys hang their hat on. Honestly, the minutes were good. I think we played all four lines. We didn't overuse a lot of guys. I think that's the recipe for our team.
I know this is your first full season, but you had 35 games or so last year. Tonight, even on a night when maybe your big guns aren't loud in terms of their contributions, sure. You know, it's Puce, it's Sam, and it's Casey, all guys who weren't here for those 35 games last season.
Yeah.
What does that say about the connective tissue of your club?
That's huge. I mean, Teddy Bluger, I thought it was one of his best games. I thought Podsy was good. I mean, listen, if we're going to go anywhere, we need everybody. You know, it's just not going to be the big guys. You're going to need, you know, four lines, six defense, or, you know, maybe even deeper, you know, the roster. So we know that's where we're built, and we're going to need everybody.
You had some changes up front, especially that Lindholm line with Garland and Joshua. You've seen that do a lot. They played a fair bit against Dreisaitl. Looked like they had a pretty solid two-way outing. What were your first impressions of that?
I like the way our lines are set up. I know, you know, there's different options. For me, it's more depth that way. I thought Lindy was really good tonight. Since he's been back, it really balances our lines. Kind of gets us a little different matches here and there. So that's a big, big plus for us, getting Lindy out there.
That is the Canucks head coach, Rick Tocchet, after a 3-1 win in Edmonton over the Oilers. And he was very happy with the way Elias Lindholm played, which is...
Lindy,
which is in direct... it's directly opposite from what Mike in downtown Kelowna said earlier. He said, yes. Lindholm, blah, blah, blah. We were talking about how good Lindholm was. Lindholm has still done nothing. It's a critical problem heading into the playoffs. You cannot defend Lindholm with a straight face. That's Mike in downtown Kelowna. So the head coach did defend Lindholm with a straight face and talk about how much he liked their game. And again, I thought defensively and shutdown role they played tonight, they had a fantastic game.
I get it. You want to see more goals and everything else. I mean, he did have an assist on the Joshua empty netter. And sure, you look at the Corsi and it wasn't good. But, I mean, you watch the game and you're going up against Leon Draisaitl for much of the night. And you're able to keep him off the score sheet and play well defensively, create a couple of chances yourself. I'm pretty happy with that kind of a performance.
No, I'm with you on that as well. All right, we'll get to more of your reaction on the other side. Plus, we'll hear more from Canuck players, including Casey DeSmith and Sam Lafferty. DeSmith, a big game between the pipes. Sam Lafferty opened the scoring for the Canucks. It's Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio, and you are listening to the Canuck Central Postgame Show presented by the number 5 Orange, a Vancouver legend. They've got sports, too. More next on Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650, and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Canuck Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
Listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Holloway trying to skate away at center ice, knocked down by Ian Cole. Canucks get the puck back. Zadora, right wing for Lafferty, into the Oilers. Oh, shoots, he scores! Sam Lafferty off the rush, rips it past Skinner, stick side, and the Canucks open the scoring in the final minute of the first. They take a 1-0 lead in Edmonton.
Lafferty comes off the bench here, and Edmonton's winger just can't close fast enough, and he puts on the Jets.
That's huge. I mean, Teddy Bluger, I thought it was one of his best games. I thought Podsy was good. I mean, listen, if we're going to go anywhere, we need everybody. You know, it's just not going to be the big guys. You're going to need, you know, four lines, six defense, or, you know, maybe even deeper, you know, the roster. So we know that's where we're built, and we're going to need everybody.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after a 3-1 win in Edmonton over the Oilers. A big win for the Canucks as they are now 1 point away from clinching the Pacific Division. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. We'll go to the phone boards in a second. We are going to hear from Canuck players postgame as well, Sam Lafferty and Casey DeSmith included. But before we do all that, Dan, what are the people saying to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650, 650?
Well, Rick in Victoria, is Joshua Bertuzzi 2.0?
I don't know about 2.0.
I'm not sure about that just yet, but Joshua is having quite the season, scored a big empty netter tonight. John in Canby Village, the Oilers look like the Minnesota Wild without McDavid. How much of that was Edmonton and how much of that was the Canucks? Look, the Oilers still had their chances. Casey DeSmith did have to come up big in certain spots, but on the power play and when they were pressing in the third, you really felt McDavid's absence, where he can just create so much chaos on the ice by himself with how he moves and how he opens up space for everybody. They certainly missed that part. And James in Qualicum Beach, the closer we get to the playoffs, definitely see the value in a guy like Zadorov. Oilers were very conscious of where he was on the ice. Just hope he plays disciplined like he did tonight. I'm never going to love everything about Zadorov's game, but when he plays physical and can get under player skin and show flash some of that offensive ability and not get caught while he's trying to flash some of that offensive ability, that's the Zadorov that I can really appreciate and see how much value he brings to this team.
Yeah, size, physicality in the playoffs. Yeah. He can have some pretty wild swings. Like, he can have like an 8, 9, 10 out of 10 performance. Then he'll have like a 3 or a 4. Like, he has those swings. And that's what makes him a bit frustrating at times. And that's why ultimately I don't see him signing a big long-term contract here as well. Mm-hmm. But for what he can bring, and if he plays like this, he can certainly be a big, big help to this team. Dean Abbasford texts in and says, Lindholm is way more valuable than I thought. Watched him closely tonight in Edmonton. And oh yeah, the Canucks head coach agrees. Lindy was great out there. That's Dean Abbasford. A bit surprised and impressed with Elias Lindholm. All right, we'll try to get some more text messages coming up in a bit. But let's take one more phone call and let's go to Evan, who's on the phone line in Pitt Meadows. Evan, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts tonight?
What's up, boys? How are we doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Good.
Good, good, good. Love the show. Big fan. My first time calling in here in a while, but I felt the need to tonight, obviously, 4-0 against the Oilers this year. I felt like Smith took a lot of heat for what he's been through the last couple outings for him. But nonetheless, I think that he really showed everyone tonight why he can be trusted as a really solid backup. The main part I wanted to bring up was I don't hear much love for my boy Tyler Myers, good Kelowna boy. He basically built that he got Pew Suter off the schneid after 34,000 games without a goal. He made a great play, well, not one to enter the zone, but two to actually get that puck towards the net. If there's one UFA defenseman on this team that we need to be thinking about re-signing, it's that big mother effer on the back end and not Philip Hronek, who, by the way, was another dash tonight. Nonetheless, the 50-goal Garbarator Hyman stays quiet once again without his boy Connor. And, yeah, man, shout-out Casey DeSmith, shout-out Tyler Myers, the backbone of this team. God love it. Go Canucks, go, baby.
Love the phone call. Thanks for calling in. That is Evan with his thoughts.
Man, Evan just throwing the heat down. Tyler Myers more important to the future of this team than Philip Hronek?
I mean, I don't know if I would go that far, but
it's certainly a hot take. It's not a cold take.
For a second, I thought he was maybe alluding to Zadorov little bit, right? But no, he obviously mentioned so much about Myers and how well he played. And somebody else texted in earlier and said, biting my tongue, hitting my head into the wall, Myers was the best defenseman on the ice tonight. One of the better games that he's played. And others were kind of, you know, gave some love to Tyler Myers tonight as well. Well, somebody said, Tyler says Myers got away with one tonight in the final minute. I mean,
he almost bottled it with that play in the third, which somehow ended up in the Oilers taking a penalty, but
yeah, with a Draisaitl giveaway. He was trying to do a Quinn Hughes spin, and he spun right into Draisaitl, took the puck away from him. And you know, it's funny because, you know, I saw a lot of people get mad at Myers. I'm like, yes, it's the one mistake he's made all night, and people are piling on. But he made a great pass to Suter.
Set up the winning goal.
Defensively, overall, he was good. He kept the puck in. He attacked well. I agree with Evan overall. I thought Myers had a very strong game.
And, you know, Zach Hyman, the fifth, the Garburator without Connor. Just a great comment. Zach Hyman's taking way too much heat for a guy that scored over 50 goals this
year. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Dino says, I love how the coach says it's a bug going around the staff, but don't worry, it's not contagious. I'm like, what? He's like, kind of makes me nervous remembering what happened to St. Louis in the first round years ago, Dino. And for those not knowing the Blues reference, it goes back to the early 2000s when the Canucks played the St. Louis Blues in the first round, and Scott Mellenby's kids got everybody sick in the locker room, and the Blues had a 3-1 lead on the Canucks, and they were just gassed, and the Canucks came back and beat them in 7 games. So I know what Dino is referring to. Hopefully, well, that's not what you see tonight.
And it again happened with the Blues even in the bubble when you know, they were the defending Stanley Cup champions at the time, and they lost to Vancouver in 6 games, and the story was that their team had a tougher go with COVID than maybe some other teams did. And that's why they just didn't have it against the Vancouver Canucks in that series.
Something you kind of worry about. You're kind of hopefully that, you know, it doesn't get contagious or don't
especially
get
especially when
sick.
Nashville's going to have like a whole week off before that first round series, assuming it is Nashville.
Now, somebody did point out if the Canucks win out and Dallas loses their final game of the season in regulation, the Canucks could still finish first in the Western Conference. That could still happen. So it's still in play. We still don't know exactly what's going to happen by the end of the season. All right, we'll try to do some more texts as the show goes on here. We are going to get to Ian McIntyre as well in a couple of minutes. But before we do that, we promise some post-game reaction from Canucks players. Casey DeSmith, fantastic performance for the Canucks tonight in Edmonton, winning his second game in Edmonton, both in regulation. And here he is meeting with the media post-game.
You know, they came out hard and they pushed in the beginning of the game. And then we found our legs. And, you know, I thought we were the better team for the second two periods for sure. And we got some big goals from some guys who you might not expect, you know, like huge goals from Laughs and Suits, and it's just so nice to see those guys rewarded for all their hard work. And you know, the D were phenomenal the whole night.
What about first place? I don't know if it was, I know it's a big deal, but I don't know if you really had to say much, but the guys seem motivated to make sure this team that's been hard charging kind of push them back a step.
Yeah, we knew this was a 4-point swing, you know, towards that goal that we had. That's not the ultimate goal that we have for this season, but that's definitely something that we've been working towards and something we take pride in.
You guys have been outstanding when carrying the lead into the third. What's allowed you to just be so comfortable all year?
I think the guys, you know, we learned early on how to win in those situations, playing the right way. You know, you saw that in the third period tonight, just the F3 was really good, getting pucks deep and just kind of playing to our strengths, which is, you know, the structure that we have and the hard work. And, you know, I think we're a fast team, so we're just hard to play against when we have that lead. And, you know, that's huge going into playoffs where, you know, you need to hold on to leads when it matters.
That is Casey DeSmith between the pipes tonight. Big game and very happy with his overall team performance. 4-point swing and the Canucks came out on top. Now, the other Canuck players we are going to hear from before we get to IMAC and a couple of texts here is Sam Lafferty. He spoke to Kate Pettersson postgame, scored a goal tonight to open up the scoring, and here he is postgame.
Canucks with a 3-1 win here in Edmonton. And Sam, you guys stuck with it there in the first period. You're able to get your team on the board with just 16 seconds left. Can you walk us through what you saw there?
We stuck with it. It wasn't our best start, but I thought after the 10-minute mark, we started to pick up some momentum. And on the goal, just a good change. And then Z made a good play in the neutral zone and had some open ice, good drives by the other guys, and just took the shot.
You guys now have 49 wins. 41 of those are when you carry a lead into the final frame. What's allowed you to be so comfortable playing with the lead?
I don't know. I think it starts with good goaltending. We got obviously great goaltending tonight from Casey. We stuck to our structure. It wasn't a perfect game by any stretch, but we know to rely on our structure when we have a lead.
The focus was obviously perfecting your game down the stretch here, but a big win against a Pacific Division opponent. How much pride do you take in extending that lead at the top?
Yeah, it was obviously a big game for us. You know, they're a good team. They're obviously missing probably their best player, but We battled hard, weathered the storm, and great goaltending, so we got it done.
Thanks. Congrats.
Thanks.
That is Sam Lafferty after the game. Short and sweet from Sam Lafferty, as you would expect, but good for him to get that goal. A couple texts I want to hit here before we get to Ian McIntyre. Mike in Vancouver, team-wise this year, the number one, third most points in a season all-time for the Canucks. Two, tied for third most wins in a season all-time for a Canucks team. Three, fifth most goals in a season all-time for a Canucks team. Great show, great season. Mike in Vancouver texting in. It has been a tremendous campaign for Vancouver, and the fact that right now they look to be closing it out to win the division is just a nice capper on a tremendous campaign.
It's I know one of our callers mentioned it earlier, but you know, you think about 14 months ago when Bruce Boudreaux was essentially nearing the end, 15 months ago now, I guess, where, you know, we were kind of wondering, all right, when's Bruce Boudreaux going to get the axe? When is this going to happen? We need to move on with the new era of the Canucks. People were ready to run Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford out of town, it seemed. And 15 months later, they're about to win the Pacific Division and have done a lot to overturn the roster. They hired the coach that's been the perfect man for the job, brought the culture back to the Canucks that was needed. And, you know, it's just been a remarkable turnaround. You don't see this really happen all that often in the National Hockey League. And everything has gone right, as a salient Jim Rutherford mentioned early in the season, right before the season began, would need to go right for them to have this kind of success. And now you hope that more of it comes in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. You certainly do. Pawan from Delta says, totally agree with the caller. Some credit to Myers. Still bugging me. Some callers criticizing Tocchet. Same coach who helped Garland, Joshua, Myers have a good season compared to last year. Pawan from Delta texting again. So,
Pawan, you should read more of the texts on our Dunbar Lumber text message inbox that really don't like Rick Tocchet's line combos right now. Want to see the Lotto line back together. Get Miller Pettersson and Lindholm together. Anything but what the current line combos are, because this team doesn't score enough to win in the playoffs. We'll see.
For sure. Somebody else said props to the last caller for calling out Hronek earlier too. I mean, it wasn't just Hronek. The only goal Edmonton scored, Hronek and Hughes were both kind of at fault. Now, Suter had a chance to clear it, didn't. Hronek was weak along the boards, and then Hughes does not pick up Kane at all, doesn't get on him, and he tips it in. Way too easy in front of the net. So actually, like we started to show off talking about, the Canucks were, the first 10 minutes, it was all Edmonton. And after that, DeSmith kept him in it. And from that point on, the Canucks played really clean hockey, generally speaking. The only two defensemen who had trouble at times in their own zone was Hughes and Hronek. The rest of the D-men were fantastic tonight, standing tall for the most part. And even so, it's not like Hughes and Hronek were horrible tonight. But on that goal, it wasn't the best shift from the Canucks' top D pair.
It wasn't. And the Canucks won this game on their depth more than anything else, right? It wasn't Pettersson or Miller or Hughes doing the things that got them the goals. I mean, they got goals from Suter and Lafferty. DeSmith was incredible to start this game. Myers makes a big play to set up Suter's goal. It was all the guys you don't think of helping the Canucks to offense, helping them to the offense they needed to win this game.
Absolutely. Kevin asks, have the Canucks swept the Oilers before? I think this was the first time. I believe this swept them in 2014-2015 as well. So I don't know about the rest, but I think that's the last time they did. All right. Thanks for all your texts and all your phone calls. Appreciate every single one of you. It's time to bring in the man we call the closer, the triple threat. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, and you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
And I look a lot better on radio than I do on TV.
I think most of us do, because then he leaves it to the imagination.
No, not you, Zach. You're so handsome. One TV screen's not enough.
I don't know about all that, but I appreciate the compliment nonetheless.
All right. By the way, I think, and it's a good question about whether the Canucks have swept the Oilers. I believe they have, because there was a period of time, several years, in fact, where I think the Danny and Hank Sedin would not have built Hall of Fame numbers were it not for beating up the Edmonton Oilers. They just abused.
Like those, remember that two-minute the shift they had? The shift that was referred to as the shift, the two-minute and 15-second offensive shift by the Sedins?
Yeah, but it was kind of game after game after game for a while when it was Vancouver-Edmonton, and Edmonton was at low tide, and Vancouver was the best that it has ever been. And this season, quietly, quietly, third already, the third most successful regular season in franchise history for a franchise that's been around 54 years, and they're going to get a division title out of it, even though Rick Tocchet didn't want to jinx himself post-game. I don't blame him. It's been a remarkable regular season. And tonight, I have to say, you know, really impressive. I was impressed anyways about how the Canucks handled this game. You know, not great at the start, but I think, you know, a lot of that was Edmonton and a lot of that was the early power play. It wasn't, you know, an unlucky penalty that Miller took getting his stick in the skates of, I think it was Desharnais. Anyways, you know, that created a bunch of chances and a lot of momentum early. But, you know, the final 40 minutes and the way the Canucks took over the game in the second, the way they managed their lead in the third, they looked so comfortable. You know, they gave up 8 shots and 2 high danger scoring chances to a team. And then, yes, obviously Connor McDavid is going to be missed. On what planet would he sit out and not be missed? Certainly not this one. But I was really impressed by how the Canucks handled this game and basically just took care of business. It would have been a real shame. And I'm going to touch wood right now, because not that I have a vested interest, but I don't want to be the person who jinxes them. But it would have been a real shame for them not to win the division, given how hard they've worked to rebrand themselves this year, to change the perception of what the Canucks are, and how long they've held first place, you know, going back to December 21st. So it's been remarkable.
And, you know, for as many of the quality moves they've made to put this team into this position, the biggest move they've made this season has been critiqued quite a bit, and that's Elias Lindholm. And we heard the coach talking how much he liked Lindy tonight, as he put it in his post-game news conference. And he played over 7 minutes against Leon Draisaitl, matched up with him pretty much for most of the night. And guess what? Leon Draisaitl did not get on the score sheet for the Edmonton Oilers. It feels like this is maybe the Elias Lindholm we should expect for the playoffs, a shutdown center Elias Lindholm.
Well, I think he's been better since he got back.
Agreed.
From his wrist injury. And certainly he's been engaged physically and, you know, really battling in his one-on-ones. And I thought he was good tonight. I was a little surprised when I looked at the fancy stats after that their expected goals was only roughly a third that line. But as you point out, Draisaitl didn't get on the board. And when you really break down, you know, the game for that line, I thought they did their best work in the final two periods, which is also when the Canucks were the better team than Edmonton. Edmonton was better in the first. And Lindholm himself, you know, he leads the team in ice time, and part of that is clearly they're looking at managing minutes. They don't want to play Quinn 25 minutes tonight. They don't want to play JT 22 minutes. But he did play slightly more than either Pettersson or Miller did Lindholm. He had 6 shifts in the final 10 minutes, which tells you something about the coaching staff's belief in him and how they plan to use him. And, you know, won 11 of 20 faceoffs mostly against Draisaitl. So I thought tonight was the game where if people wonder about the wisdom of having Lindholm on the third line as your center, instead of playing him in the top 6, probably with Pettersson, and thinking, oh, this guy's too good, you can't play him down there, and Pettersson needs help, this, that. I thought tonight was the great test case of why Tocchet wants him as a third-line center, because, you know, you're going to need 3 lines. You're going to have lots of games in the playoffs. Well, let's hope they have lots of games in the playoffs where they don't get to dictate changes, and you're playing elite teams every night, and those teams generally go deeper than just 6 good forwards. And if you have a line like Lindholm Garland and Joshua. And I thought Garland and Joshua were as good as they've been, you know, just a continuation. Those guys have been good for a long time. They were good again tonight. But when you have those guys that can go out and play against a line that's got a 50-goal scorer in Hyman, one of the top five players in the world in Draisaitl, even though the best player in the world, McDavid, is not in that lineup, and hold your own in that matchup, and that allows Pettersson and Miller to get better matchups elsewhere, or at least, you know, maybe more offensively inclined matchups, I think that's a great recipe for success. I think it's the kind of thing you need to have if you're going to be successful in the playoffs.
No, absolutely. We started the thing off, the conversation off, talking about how the Canucks swept the Edmonton Oilers in the past before. So Fast Eddie Gregory did some work. So before 2015, when the Canucks beat the Oilers in all five games that faced them, now two of those games were in extra time. One was a shootout, one was an overtime win, but they were 5-0. And they had never done it before 2015. And the Canucks did have an 0-21-3 record over a three-year span in the 80s versus the Oilers. So a pretty bad dry run of 24 straight losses and 3 years of 0-7-1. So as you mentioned, it was pretty grim through the 80s and part of the 90s, but they did take over for a while. And this is the first time they've beat them all games, all in regulation. So pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, not many parts of the 90s, I'll say, because the balance of power shifted after Pat Quinn got here, and really the 91-92 team was kind of the breakthrough team for Vancouver. But I remember as a teenager those games in the 80s, and, you know, the Oilers were a dynasty and the Canucks were a 60-point team. So it was tough. I remember Steve Tambellini telling a story once, because, of course, played on some of those Canuck teams, and he said, like, they'd be playing, and I'm paraphrasing here, but they'd absolutely be playing their asses off, and maybe it's 2-2 or 3-3 in the third period, and he said you'd be going out for a face-off, and if you look at the Oilers and Anderson and Curry and Gretzky and Coffey, and they're all just kind of smiling. It's like they were amused that the Canucks, oh, look at these guys, they think they're in the game. And then Edmonton would just flex, score four times in the last 15 minutes and win 6-2. There were a lot of bleak nights then. But there's been a lot of positive, more positive nights for Vancouver than we feel, than I think most people realize, because it has been so bleak. And not just bleak in terms of losing, it's been disappointing the last 3 years. Like, you can lose if you feel like you're moving towards something, and ultimately you have hope that you'll get where you want to go, and sometimes losing is a necessity to get there. A lot of the losing the last 3 years just felt needless and painful and kind of piling on the franchise. It already has a lot of insecurity from going five decades without winning a Stanley Cup. And that's partly actually why this season, it's, you know, third most successful in terms of points in the regular season. But it may be, well, I mean, it was pretty good the first year the Canucks won the President's Trophy, and they were the best team in the NHL until game six of the final against Boston. That was an incredible season. You know, Vancouver, by almost any measure, was the best team in the NHL. That was a lot of fun for fans to watch. But part of the reason this season has been so enjoyable is because it was not expected by a lot of people. And even though the players always believed in themselves, they had to prove it to everyone, including themselves, that they could win. And so just as the losses of the last 3 years were so much more painful because of what had been expected and what the Canucks had been capable of, I think the wins this season have been that much more enjoyable, because very few people foresaw this level of success before the season started.
Yeah, and it's, as Jim Rutherford said at the start, you know, a lot has to go right for us, and a lot did go right. I mean, they haven't missed on too many of the acquisitions they made in the offseason or during this season. And another one of those came up big tonight, Casey DeSmith. You know, he had given up 6 goals in each of his last 2 starts, had lost his last 4 starts before tonight. But they don't win this game without how he played in the first 10 minutes of this hockey game.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought it was, you know, in a way, a bold call to go back to him. You know, the safer call based on recent form is you put Silovs back out there. You know, DeSmith had, what was it? I don't have it in front of me now. His last 2 games, 59 shots, 12 goals, I think.
Yeah.
And they lost lopsided big games against playoff bound opponents with DeSmith. You know, this was a big night for the Canucks. This was a monster night for Casey DeSmith on a number of levels. For him personally, to get this opportunity, and you know, if Demko plays the final 2 games and this is it for DeSmith, that he gets to have a memory like this. But I think even more pragmatically, the fact that there is so little game preparation for Thatcher Demko, it's really important that Casey DeSmith is in form when this team goes into the playoffs and feels confident when this team goes into the playoffs. And I think tonight probably did wonders for his confidence and self-belief. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Demko. Again, it's, you know, Talkett keeps telling us how great Demko looks and that he's ahead of schedule. And this, you know, that's all good, but he's going to play 1 or 2 games now to get ready for the biggest playoff series this franchise has had, probably since, you know, it's bigger than it was in 2015 because of the regular season that they've had, because there's no dominant team, because they've beaten all the good teams. They've shown what they're capable of. It's not, you know, it's not like it's a bonus, although maybe it is, again, based on what people expected before this season. But I think this is a massive spring for this franchise. And the fact that their potential Vezina Trophy winning goalie, or certainly a Vezina Trophy finalist goalie, is going to have so little game preparation is a real disconcerting factor in this as they get ready for the Stanley Cup tournament.
Yeah, and that makes the game coming up on Tuesday against Calgary so much bigger in terms of how Thatcher Demko looks. And Ian, we look forward to spending some time with you in person in that game, the final regular season home game. But lucky for us, it's not the final Canucks home game of the season, because we have playoffs in Vancouver and can't wait for it. And we can't wait to see you again on Tuesday.
Well, I'll look forward to that as well.
Great stuff as always, Ian. Thanks for your time, and I look forward as well to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca. And that is Ian McIntyre. Fantastic as always. The closer, the triple threat, taking care of business this evening.
He is our Eric Gagne, and we love him for it.
Yes, absolutely. All right, it's Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio, Eric Gagne. Yeah,
before, well, maybe he doesn't want to be associated with Eric Gagne.
Well, before Eric Gagne became like a complete gas can, yeah. But like, you know, he had a really good run there. Great stuff from Fast Eddie Gregory producing the show. Thank you all for listening, participating. It's always a pleasure. We appreciate every single one of you. We look forward to chatting with you again on Monday on Canucks Central. We're back at from 4 to 6. The next Canucks game is Tuesday. This has been the Canucks Central Post Game Show, presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.